Blog Talk Radio. America Meditating Blog Talk Radio Show. We collect wisdom, hear stories, and inspire each other. I'm Sister Jenna. Tune in live from Monday through Friday at 8 a.m.
Hi, I'm Angela Peabody of Global Woman Peace Foundation, and I listen to America's Meditating Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Dr. Vint Verga, author of The Soul of All Living Creatures, and I listen to America Meditating Radio.
The entire world watched.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And humanity saw that the sky was not the limit. Achievement. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna, and we're broadcasting from the beautiful Meditation Museum in Tyson's Corner. We keep laughing because as I put in my annual report for the year, it's maddening. Do you know that we've had over 180 events in 2015? And we still have more to come. We still have a few weeks left. And so I was talking to the team. I go, what's behind all of this? What's behind the fact that we are so driven and we are so inspired? And I think I came across a quote that answered that best. And it was a friend of mine that's the CEO of Oxford Leadership, Brian Bacon. And this is what Brian said. Great companies don't hire skilled people and motivate them. They hire already motivated people and inspire them. People are either motivated or they are not. Unless you give motivated people something to believe in, something bigger than their job to work toward, they will motivate themselves to find a new job, and you'll be stuck with whoever's left. Isn't that powerful? And amazing. And so I think that we've got the greatest team, everyone at the Meditation Museum. I would just like to tell all of you how much I'm so humbled and touched by your dedication and your work and your service to humanity. And I believe that our consistency and determination and love and empathy and patience, this is an important pathway to peace, is to be patient on the pathway to peace. Is that we will walk into an era of a beautiful age in which we will exchange certain vices for virtues, and we will begin to look into each other's eyes, not from just the level of the surface. You know, you look at a successful person, but you don't know what's underneath all of that success. And so we will relate to each other more from the content of our character, as Martin Luther King said best, versus what's just on the surface, and we say, I want a little bit of that too. Please hold the line. We're about to bring on an incredible human being, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. Congressman Cleaver will share with us his journey and some few good things that he's up to. And before I get the congressman on, I'd like to take us into what we do best here on the air, and that is to take time to focus our attention on the things that are important so we can lead and we can think with clarity and wisdom. Take deep breath and relax. Om Shanti. the time that we choose to be aware. It doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. About connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender. Discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling, who would think of you and who would you think of? The Supreme Soul would think of you, and you, the liberated soul, would think of the Supreme. In this state of absolute freedom, I am truly who I am. A free, peaceful, pure, immortal, and eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. This time, Welcome back, my friends. That was Letting Go from my Off the Grid Into the Heart CD. The America Meditating Radio Show is very privileged to welcome a friend of ours, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The congressman is now serving his sixth term, representing Missouri's 5th Congressional District, the home district of President Harry Truman. He's a member of the exclusive House Financial Services Committee, the ranking member of the Subcommittee of Housing and Insurance, and also a senior whip of the Democratic Caucus. Now, Congressman Cleaver has received 5 honorary doctoral degrees and received a master's degree from St. Paul's School of Theology of Kansas City. And during his 112th Congress, he was unanimously elected the 20th chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Coming from a family of educators, he has fought for affordable and accessible educational opportunities for everyone, including job retraining initiatives. So his constant focus on job creation and economic development projects has become a reliable fixture in all of his activities in Congress. He's much loved throughout the Kansas City area as both a political leader and as a United Methodist pastor. And today, the America Meditating Radio Show proudly welcomes a wonderful human being. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Well, it's good to be with you today. It is
hey.
A fabulous day to be with you.
It sure is. Happy holidays to you, Congressman Cleaver.
Well, you as well. I love this time of the year. There is something that is almost indescribable about this time of the year. And I guess it has to do with the smells, you know, the optics of with all of the lighting and
the light.
It's just a fabulous moment for me, and I look forward to it every year.
So you're one of those happy Christmas folks like I am, like you just want to
yes.
hug everybody.
That is me.
It's the spirit of giving. I think that we are being given a date and a permission that be abundant, and I feel that it's reminding us of a kind of a spirit that we're actually supposed to live in all year round, but it just becomes so amplified at this time of the year. So I want
yes.
to have a really heart-to-heart chit-chat with you.
Sure.
I know that a lot of our listeners would love to learn more about you, and we do have a good listenership in your district as well. You've been a pastor for many, many years, and I'm curious to hear more about what was your inspiration to become a pastor, because it's interesting to bring that sort of a sense of ministry into our walls of Congress, and how did you lead yourself, or how did your life lead you to becoming an elected official to serve in the U.S. Congress?
Well, I grew up very, very poor. My mother, father, and 3 sisters and I lived in public housing for about 7 years. We started out in a shack that still stands not too far from downtown Dallas, Texas. And but I had in my family a lot of people who had been educated and many of them who had entered into the ministry, including my great-grandfather, Reverend Noah Albert Cleaver, and he had a brother who became a bishop, a Church of God in Christ bishop in the Bay Area, Bishop Luther Cleaver. We had a cousin, Reverend Silas Cleaver in San Angelo. Then my father's brother, Reverend Leroy Cleaver, Jr., Jackson Memorial Church in Wichita Falls, and it goes on and on. My first cousin, the Reverend A.L. Cleaver of Fort Worth, Texas. And I frankly have to said to myself early on, I don't want to be a preacher because I have all these preachers in my family and all of them are broke. I thought, you know, why in the world would I want to follow, you know, in their footsteps? So I have to tell you that I'm not so sure today that I gleefully chose this as the arena in which I would exist for the remainder of my life. I think it came after me, and I resisted only mildly. My father-in-law used to say that had I told him when I asked to marry his daughter that I was going to go into the ministry, he's not sure what he would have said, but he said, you know, he didn't realize that I had come from that background, that you know, Levite, if you look at the Old Testament, the people who took care of the temple were families and most of them were called the Levites. And so there is a Leviticus strand that seems to run through the Cleaver clan. So I had a degree, received a degree in sociology, and then went to seminary 3 years to get a Master's of Divinity. And while there, while in seminary, I was invited to pastor a little church with about 47 members on paper. However, the actual membership may have been something like 19. And I say today openly that when the bishop appointed me to that church, I wasn't even an ordained deacon in the Methodist church. You know, your first ordination when you're studying is be ordained a deacon. And then the ultimate route to travel is to be ordained an elder, which is the highest you can go. So I was not even a deacon, and they sent me to this little church, and I am convinced that they sent me there to kill it. You know, they said, let's you know, it's costing the conference a lot of money to keep that church open, so let's send this kid out here who obviously can't preach. He's only preached in his life to his three sisters, and they wouldn't contribute anything to an offering. So let's send him over there. He'll kill the church, and we can save thousands of dollars each year. Well, I went to the church, and I was fortunate that I was able to attract a very good musician, and people started coming not to hear me preach but to hear the choir. And so then the city condemned the building. We eventually had to look for another location, and we merged with another small church. And it seems, and this is real, it seems like one Sunday I walked in and we had 300 or 400 people. And then it just seemed like, you know, maybe short time after that, then we'd have 1,500 people. And and it moved on up. So,
but maybe that's what makes when you are ministering on the Hill for rights and interests for your district, isn't it? Like the same, instead of inviting everyone, now we've got to go to God and get our acts together. You're saying,
yes.
Maybe you're standing there with your heart connected to God saying, you people have got to help my people in the district. This is what they need now. I mean, what's it like when you're ministering? Yeah, tell me, like, what's it like up there when you're actually really trying to fight for a particular bill for your district?
Well, it's difficult because we have 435 different views on just about every issue. And everyone believes that he or she is unique, and in fact, they're correct. And so everybody wants something for their district, as they should. We all represent about 800,000 people in our congressional districts. And what I have done is, I think, and I don't even think it's arguable, that I probably have the best relationship of any member of Congress with all members of Congress.
Beautiful.
And I think it is, and it's been done with great intentionality. I send out a letter every Friday to all of the members of Congress on issues of civility. I don't take a partisan position. I just talk about human beings with the desire to work together and make good things happen. And so I've been able to get some things done, even though my district only benefited from it because of relationships and the way I, you know, interact with my colleagues.
But that's what it is, isn't it? The power of success, and I think many of us are being called to turn our attention to exactly what you said, relationships.
Yes.
We tend to realize more than anything else, no matter how skilled you are or how much resource you have, if you don't have good relationships, you can only get so far. And even if you get to your destination with all the money and the glory, you're miserable, and that's not why we're here. And
I think that's
it's very important, Congressman, because our country has so much resource and we are being called to have better relationships with outside sources as well as our own sources on the inside of our country's wall. You know, the environment is a big issue. And in 2009, with a multitude of accomplishments, both locally and congressionally, you've induced one of the most ambitious projects of your political career, and I believe that was the Green Impact Zone. I would love if you can tell our listeners a little bit more about the project and how greening the environment had an impact on the community.
Well, first, when we passed what became known as the stimulus bill, which was passed as a means of helping to move the country out of the Great Recession, I made a decision, and it was a risky decision, that I did not want to try to spend money as we had done in the past, which was the shotgun approach. And that is, you put $200 over here, $2,000 there, and then 30 miles away you put another $400, and after a year you look back and there's nothing there and no improvements done. So I said, look, I'm going to pick the worst spot in Kansas City, Missouri, and we're going to make it green. We'll spend all of the money on trying to create a green environment. After all, we know that we are living in, based on scientific reports, the warming of this planet significantly, and we know that there are tears in the ozone layer, which means that the world, that more of the deadly rays from the sun can get through to us. So we started constructing porous sidewalks, which means that the water doesn't sit on top of the cement. It goes through and into the ground. We started building rainwater retention centers where we save the rainwater to be used later. We installed what's called smart meters in the walls of people who lived in the poorest neighborhood. And these smart meters allows people to control power grids that they use. So, they could set the thermostat at home after they leave in the morning by the telephone. And
brilliant.
at any point during the month, they can go to their meter and find out exactly how much energy they've used. We put in solar panels. We put in furnaces in the homes of seniors that were efficient. We installed something called a shot spotter, which detected the sound of guns and could pinpoint within 10 feet the exact spot from which it was fired. And so while that's not necessarily seen to be green, it is when you understand that we picked a really rough part of the town, and the people who would, the would-be shooters, started leaving. I mean, there was some better territory elsewhere. So we I told people who lived in the area, look, everything will be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it just simply means it's not the end. And we're going to continue to the end and making this area, we weatherized homes, because there were homes where you could stand on the front porch in the dead of winter and be warmed, simply because the air was coming out of from the underneath the doors or out of the windows because of poor insulation. So we've done all this now. I think we're the greenest spot on the planet. We think we were beaten by Brad Pitt, who put millions and millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, into New Orleans, into the Ninth Ward, after Katrina. And those homes, I mean, there are people who live in New Orleans who are having $3.50 a month utility bills. And we are right on their heels, and it's a remarkable thing. And if you talk to people in the area, they are enormously pleased with how things are turning out.
Sure, I'd be too. You know, in my headquarters in Mount Abu, India, we started solar energy about 20 years ago, and we turned out to be able to set up solar power in our whole campus at our whole university, Congressman Cleaver. It feeds 20,000 people for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I understand the power of that, because especially like in developing nations where the electricity keeps going off and now you're pulling the natural resource of the sun, it's powerful. And I don't know if you've heard of thermal solar power, but we're also in the process of building the first of its kind in dish technology with a direct stream and steam of generation mode. And we're planning to light up a whole city and help people in the village. And one of the things I think it's so important for us in this country is to understand the importance of this kind of energy, because we are really, really going to need energy in the future. And if we don't start to conserve now or come up with these alternatives, I don't know how we're going to manage.
We will not be able to manage. I'm going to go to Paris for the World Conference on Climate Change next week, where men and women are gathering from every nation around the world, and because we all recognize that unless we change our behavior, our children right. and our children's children will inherit a place that is going to be not
almost
as
useless.
Livable.
Exactly. Exactly. I get that. Well, congratulations for your contribution to that area and lots of good wishes in Paris. I want to talk about this incredible idea that you've sponsored legislation to designate Union Station in D.C. as the Harry S. Truman Union Station, and that's going to be fun. You've been working to have a statue of Missouri's own President Harry Truman placed in the nation's capital. How's that going, and why was that so important
well.
For you to do? Tell me.
Well, every state has the right to place two statues in the U.S. Capitol, in Statuary Hall. And
right.
In the 1990s, California took out an unknown person and put in the statue of Ronald Reagan. And most states, if they've ever had a president, his statue, and it's his at this point, is in the Capitol, except Missouri. We have had a president who was a remarkable human being, and now the historians are recognizing him, that is Harry Truman, and we would like to bring his statue here. Now, each state must pay for it, the sculptor doing the work and getting it to Washington from the home district. All of this will cost about $300,000, and it has to be raised privately, and I'm in the process of trying to do that now. So it's a tremendous project, but I am really excited about it because I think we're going to be able to bring Harry Truman. Let me just say a couple of seconds on it. Harry Truman desegregated the military, and by all accounts, he grew up in a home where his parents were haters of African Americans. And so most people are amazed that having grown up in that house, he would have developed a whole different theology of life. And began to do many things. It was his idea that we create something called Medicare. And he was unable to get it completely done while he was president. So Lyndon Johnson was able to get it done and actually flew to Kansas City and then went out to Independence to the Truman Library, where he met with Bess and Harry Truman for the signing of the bill, for the official signing of the Medicare bill. And it was Harry Truman's original idea to do that. And I think that, you know, the people who do great things, if we are able to lift them up so that our children can see what really makes a great person, we will do great good for the future of the world.
Very beautifully said, and how important of a time that is. I know you're really busy and you're going to have to go. Before I let you go from this very heartfelt conversation, could you leave our listeners with a life quote that perhaps you're living by and any information that you'd like the listeners to know about where they can be of support, a website, anything like that? And we would sure to love to get you back on in the near future.
I would love to. I would love to come back on. But there's something that I think people would be well poised to embrace for a lifetime if they could feel it as I have, and it is to promise yourself to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, too happy to permit the presence of trouble in your life.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That was lovely. Is there a website that our listeners can find information on Congressman Cleaver?
Well, yes. Yeah, so they just go to EmmanuelCleaver.com or EmmanuelCleaver.house.gov.
Congressman Cleaver, thank you so much for contributing to our nation and wishing you all the best around the holiday season.
Thank you. And this holiday season, my wish list has one item. Peace.
There it is. We shall fulfill it.
All right.
All the best. Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we are gaining hope, or shall I say regaining hope, in our members of Congress on the Hill. As you heard, our conversation with Congressman Cleaver, heartfelt, genuine, and wasn't really political, wasn't trying to sell us something or try to tell us that we've got to vote or be here for him. but just a little bit about his life and how he has been unfolding on his journey to give us an idea of what is actually behind the content of the man who is in service to our nation. I hope you've enjoyed today's conversation, and as Congressman Cleaver left us with his wish for the holiday season, peace. And why don't we support that by having one of our most beautiful, beautiful entertainers, Sanatan Kaur, to take us into the beautiful track of her Power of Love. Remember, no one can take away our happiness unless you give them permission. And we are here to love each other the same. So let's do that. Take care, everyone. Happy holidays.